I asked you if you would come today for this press conference in order to make an announcement. And I toyed around with the idea of maybe joking with you a little bit. However, we have a nation to save, and it's important that we get to that here in Iowa. And so I would start this statement in this fashion. And serving Iowans for 19 years, and that's 6 years in the state senate and 13 years as your congressman, it's a rare privilege that would likely not be duplicated in another 10,000 lifetimes. And this rare opportunity, therefore, cannot be squandered. It's become a great, great privilege as the dean of the Iowa congressional delegation to get to know all 17 original Republican candidates for president, both professionally and personally. And I count many, if not all of them, as friends and colleagues. I like them, I enjoy them, I appreciate them, I respect them. They are fellow warriors in the political arena. At no time in the history of the United States has any party fielded such an array of extraordinarily talented candidates, each of whom would be clearly a better choice for president than Hillary Clinton. Our nation's sick, and our nation is getting sicker. Americans have been pitted against each other by the current administration. It began early on in the Obama administration. We've been divided by the left down the fault lines of race, of ethnicity, prosperity and poverty, sexuality, national origin, and religion. We've become a tangle of squabbling nationalities, as Teddy Roosevelt referred to that 100 years ago, and of coddled victims groups. The pillars of American exceptionalism have been badly damaged by the assaults from the left. It's our job to defend those pillars and refurbish them, for they are the foundation of the soul of America. Hear, hear. That's why my consistent prayer for nearly a year has been to ask God to raise up a leader whom he will use to restore the soul of America. We've watched the dismantling of the national self-confidence of the unchallenged greatest nation in the world. That's us, in case the left is listening. And we've receded from vast regions of influence. Much of the influence had been paid for by American blood. We have, not without a congressional fight, seen our military degraded and watched as our combat troops valiantly risk the lives while the rules of engagement tie their hands. We've watched as the Middle East exploded into a cauldron of sectarian violence, and we've watched as a weak and feckless president dithered at the cost of thousands of lives and created millions of displaced people. We've watched as President Obama virtually invited Russia to insert itself by overt military action in defense of our enemies and to defeat our allies. And now the president is determined to import to America hundreds of thousands of displaced persons who will never assimilate into the American civilization. That's the fruits of Obama's feckless foreign policy. We've watched as modern science shows us in 4D technicolor the heartbeats, the arms, the legs, the sex, and even the personalities of innocent little miracles in the womb. Amen. And still the heart of President Obama and every Democrat candidate for president's hearts remained hardened. Amen. And the will of the American people has been thwarted. We've watched as a rogue Supreme Court on a bare 5-4 majority transformed the institution of marriage from something it has always been since the garden to something it has never been in the history of humanity. We've watched as our already porous border was turned into a 2,000-mile-long neon sign that flashes an advertisement for free health care, free education, free housing, free food, free Obama phones. And the Obama message has become, come, break our laws, live free and live happily ever after here in America, where we will take care of you with taxpayers' dollars. It wasn't enough for the current administration to turn the Border Patrol into the welcome wagon. They also sued the state of Arizona for doing the job for we the people that the Obama administration refused to do and sent passenger airplanes paid by your tax dollars to transfer illegal immigrants from Central America into the United States at taxpayer expense. And in many cases, the Obama administration has completed the crime of human trafficking by meeting them at the border and transferring the illegal alien to the destination of their choice in each of the 50 states and at taxpayer expense. We've watched as our current president said 22 times, I don't have the constitutional authority to grant executive amnesty. And we watched as he proceeded to violate his own constitutional principles and his own oath of office. Given before a nation, a world, and before we the people, and concluding with, so help me God. President Obama's executive amnesties are a blatant usurpation of Article I congressional power, even by Obama's own words, and they must be reversed, and the balance of power must be restored, our constitutional balance of power. We need a president who is pro-life, a president who is pro-marriage, a constitutional originalist who will make judicial appointments of judges to the Supreme Court and all federal courts, who believe the Constitution means what it says and means what it was understood to mean at the time of ratification. We need a president who is for a strong national defense, who has a plan to defeat the ideology of Islamic jihad and to destroy the caliphates. We need a president who will restore our military might, use it sparingly and judiciously, and victoriously. We need a president who can stare down Putin over the geopolitical chessboard and outmaneuver him on the world stage. We need a president who is unequivocal in his determination to repeal every word of Obamacare and rip it out by the roots as if it had never been enacted. Americans can never be a truly free people if government manages our health, because health care eventually becomes a series of life or death decisions, and we can't have government deciding who lives and who doesn't live. We need a president whose oath of office is taken as seriously as a blood oath to the American people, one that he will not violate even unto death. We need a president who will restore the balance of powers and the authorities granted in the Constitution to each of the three branches of government. We need a president who will build a fence, a wall and a fence, to finally secure all of our southern border, and who will instill the will in a new administration to enforce laws passed by Congress. We need a president who will eliminate sanctuary cities and restore the respect for the rule of law and for law enforcement officers themselves, both in and out of uniform. We need an immigration policy designed to enhance the economic, the social, and the cultural well-being of the United States of America. We need a president who opposes amnesty and who never feels the political need to try to redefine the word amnesty. We need a legal immigration merit system that rewards immigrants who can best reward America. And we need a president who will return America to the meritocracy that made us great. Amen. That candidate has to be able to win. In order to win, he must be able to appeal to appeal to the full breadth of the Republican Party. That requires support from the establishment wing and very strong support from the largest group, the Constitutional Christian Conservatives. He needs to have a strong appeal to the libertarian wing of the party as well, and he must be able to raise the money to drive the campaign to victory. When the nomination is awarded, the general election battle begins. The national debate will be over divergent directions competing for the destiny of America. A victory will require that he energize the Christian conservatives for a large turnout. Some said that didn't happen 4 years ago. 5 to 8 million Christian conservatives stayed home by some accounts. We can't have that happen again. He's got to be able to inspire the Christian conservatives. And that will require that our candidate appeal to the independent also and the patriotic voter and to discerning Democrats. I'm convinced that the candidate I'll be supporting embodies all of these qualities and qualifications and more. He has an unmatched intellect grounded in constitutionalism, the rule of law, and American exceptionalism. The candidate I'll be endorsing has been unmatched in his tenacity to take on the Washington cartels. He knows how Washington works and has successfully taken on the D.C. elites. He has consistently stood on principle. He has persistently reminded us that Washington won't listen. I can tell you from personal experience that the candidate I'll endorse does listen, and he does think, and he's always grounded on our basic shared values, and the candidate I'll be endorsing knows how to act when it's time to act. I believe Ted Cruz is the candidate who is the answer to my prayers a candidate whom God will use to restore the soul of America. It was probably Friday. I've been gone on a foreign trip, and I went through Turkey, Serbia, Croatia, Hungary, Sweden. I saw the erosion of the culture in Europe, and I'm not very optimistic about whether they can ever be formed again to be the core of Western civilization that they once were because of the colossal cultural suicide that they're committing. And on my way home, the pieces, the doubt drifted away and the conviction settled in. And so we began to set this up on Friday. And this was as soon as we could practically do a press conference.
What does your endorsement mean for him? Are you going to campaign with him?
If he'll let me. I hope so. I want to throw myself in. I'm in with both feet. I'm in all the way. I want to spend all the time I can helping the campaign. I think our country is, as we're at a pivotal point. Many of us agree with that. In fact, all of our Republican candidates, I think, agree with that statement. And my regret is that, you know, I like these candidates. I like the guys and I like the gal. And I respect them. And any one of them would be a better president than the one we have today. And any one of them emerging as a nominee is someone I can enthusiastically support. But I do believe that Ted Cruz is the full package, the constitutional conservative who can restore the soul of America.
Last time around, you waited until very close to the caucuses to endorse. This gives you time to try to influence people. What will be your number one core argument? You made several today. Mm-hmm. What's the one sentence that you'll tell people to convince them?
Well, you know, I think the one sentence is to restore the soul of America.
Amen.
Well, I like and respect Dr. Carson. He's a very cerebral individual, and when I make my statements about the intellect of Ted Cruz, I have to pause a minute because I can't quite say that there's any intellect that's superior to Dr. Carson's. I watch him and I listen to him, and the zone of Washington, D.C. is not an area that he's familiar with, and so that gives me pause. You need to know what's going on in that organism to do something about it. Can he restore the soul of America? He's one who can. And I think that his vision on what America looks like when America is right is a clear vision and a good vision. But I'm not as convinced that he can be the individual to restore that soul as I am with Ted Cruz.
Talk about your foreign trip and the immigrant issues you saw and how that either reinforces or helps shape your thoughts on the immigrant issues facing this country.
I stood at the border in Shahid, Serbia, and watched the migrants flowing into Croatia and from there on to Slovenia and into Austria and into Germany and some into Sweden. 1,000 people getting on every train, at least 6 trains a day, sometimes as many as 11 trains a day. 6 trains a day, 1,000 people, over 2 million people going through one single port of entry pouring into Europe. They cannot sustain that. If they had the money and the infrastructure, they can't sustain it because their culture will eventually be shifted over to a culture of Islam. And they carry so much cultural guilt that they want to be multicultural, and they'll say to me, 10 years I was invited to go there to give them a speech on what they could do with the dying civilization. Now they say, well, because of the demographics, because they've got a birth rate of 1.34 or somewhere in that zone per woman, a fertility rate, they know that their population is collapsing. They didn't make a decision to have babies to reproduce themselves. They said, all we can do with our declining, with our demographics being what they are, the only way we save Europe is to fill Europe up with people that are anything but Europeans. And when I see that, and I see what's happening at the hand of Barack Obama here in this country, the same action, just a delayed action, to fill America up in a fashion that has kicked sideways this thing that we've embraced for my lifetime, which is called assimilation into the American dream and the American civilization, that comes together in a way that we need a president who understands that, and one who will restore this civilization.
Congressman, last week, Senator Cruz was criticized by some of his opponents about his participation in providing an amendment to the Gang of Eight bill that stripped out the path to citizenship. Still, what he was proposing under your definition would have been classified as amnesty. So I'm curious, as your main issue, how do you look at his actions in that 2013 amendment process as being consistent with your views on immigration?
Okay, I'm dusting off those amendments in my mind. I was aware of what was going on in real time in 2013. As I recall, it was an amendment that increased H-1Bs. And there was another amendment that would have denied a path to citizenship, which was written into the bill, into the Gang of Eight's bill. And I knew at the time, and I've had this conversation with Senator Cruz since then, and I will tell you that another individual I work very closely with in the Senate is Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions voted with Ted Cruz. I don't think anybody's going to say Jeff Sessions is pro-amnesty. But that what Ted Cruz was doing, where he introduced two strategic amendments that were designed to, if not to kill the bill or gut the bill, but to expose the motives of the people that were promoting it. And one of them was to deny citizenship for those who were in the categories listed under the Gang of Eight's bill. But they were about advancing citizenship. He exposed that. And so I think that brought some people out on the other side. They were for amnesty. And the other one, the H-1B piece of that, was to make it to demonstrate that the votes were cooked, that they had created a pact going in. The proponents of Gang of Eight had created a pact that they were not going to allow amendments unless it was their own, and they were going to vote down anything that tried to either improve or change the bill. And I think he succeeded in that, and it was a good strategy, unless you want to look back at that and say, if he'd anticipated he was going to be a presidential candidate, he might not have done that.
But there were still parts in his amendments, and he spoke in support of either granting a temporary legal status or a permanent legal status, not citizenship. And under your definition, you would consider that still amnesty,
okay,
correct?
But the strategic, under the strategic amendment that he offered, it was to divide the citizenship from the rest. So as I understand the structure of the language, that he really didn't have a choice. If he was going to pry out citizenship and identify that they wanted citizenship, he was going to have offer an amendment that still allowed the language for a temporary or a legal status to be left in America. I don't see that as an advocacy for granting amnesty, because it was a strategic amendment. But I also have read through Ted Cruz's immigration policy paper, and I like what I read. It's got a lot of good immigration stuff in it. And I read that, and I think that it's something that a guy like Jeff Sessions and Steve King, we could sit down and sign off on every word of it.
But it still doesn't address what to do with the illegal, undocumented immigrants in the country, correct? Some questions about where he stands on that, or how he would handle dealing with the undocumented?
Well, I think that nobody wants to go through down this path of addressing that in a document paper, because invariably 3/4 of the people in this room will say, well, you can't deport 11 million people. And that's the mantra on the other side. So what he says, he's going to enforce the law, and he's going to eliminate the sanctuary cities and jurisdictions. I see in there the New IDEA Act. That will get this job done. And build a fence. I call it a fence, a wall, and a fence. That'll get the job done. And so if we do all of those things, the following question will be redundant, and we can do it incrementally without jerking the rug out from underneath American employers and without dramatically shaking up our society. That's what I hope happens, sir.
Yeah. You said that, Congressman, the endorsement comes just a couple of days after this entire, controversy or kerfuffle came to be. Why now? Is it just coincidence that after this that you needed to support the senator and say that this is where he's at on immigration, the timing of it?
Well, It's not a strategy. Yeah. It's not a strategy, but I was asked a question back here, what motivated me to bring this together. And that was a smaller piece of the motivation. There needs to be some clarity brought to this immigration question. I believe that the immigration situation we have in the United States is an existential threat to America's future.
But the timing about it now, today is announced.
Yes, and if we get this debate wrong in this presidential race, America can be destroyed by getting this immigration wrong. So let's make sure we're clear on the positions of our presidential candidates, And I hope that this endorsement does add clarity to Ted Cruz's position on immigration and any of the competitors that are blurring his position on immigration.
Congressman King, you mentioned in your endorsement that the candidate you're supporting, Ted Cruz, would need to rally support not just the Christian conservatives, but also the establishment wing of the Republican Party.
I thought you might catch that.
How will Senator Cruz do that?
Well, you know, I thought about that when I put that in, and you know, he's got some work that goes on into the establishment wing, but we can expect, if this narrows it down to where I want it to go, if he's getting close to the nomination, the establishment wing is going to look and say, well, okay, let's figure out how we can be supportive. And here's what I say is that, you know, I've been in this same arena. It isn't a lot different where Ted Cruz is today versus where I've been for my whole political career.
Yeah.
And so I say to the establishment wing of the party, what do you want? Well, they want low taxes, low regulation, unless they're regulating their competitors, a strong national defense, and a robust opportunity to buy, sell, trade, make gain, and have a good economy.
Yeah.
I'm for all of that. And so for where I stand, I can say this. I think I give the establishment everything they want. And I think Ted Cruz matches me up pretty closely in that. I think he gives the establishment everything they want. He just gives them more than they want. And so that's the part that's got to get sorted out between now and the nomination, is the establishment going to be happy getting more than they want as long as they get everything they want? It'll be okay.
When you say it needs to be sorted out, do you mean that he needs to change his approach to, let's say, Senate leadership or the establishment type of the party, or do you mean that the establishment needs to change its approach to him?
I'm more suggesting that, first, we all need to be nice to each other. So there's been a little friction there in the Senate. I recognize that. So hopefully that can be toned down a little bit. But I think that both sides have to look at it. But it seems to be that when the wedges get tapped in, it's the establishment that taps them in. And I've tried to heal this together, and I've said to most of you in this room that I'm trying to keep this party together, and invariably there's a wedge tapped in that divides. And usually it is, drop the social issues, don't deal with that. We want to have open borders, but we don't want to admit to wanting cheap labor. Those are the things that divide the conservatives from the establishment wing of the party. And so if the establishment wing can have those things that they legitimately ought to have, which is an opportunity to do business successfully in this country with a long-term vision so that the next generations can do the same thing, and we're going to have a strong national defense, and we have to defeat the ideology of Islamic Jihad, they should be all for that. I believe they are. I'm for that. Ted Cruz is for that. So,
what part of the so-called draft Romney movement that the stories that were gelling over the weekend did that play in your decision?
Not at all. I don't really take that seriously. Can you imagine having 15 candidates for president and going out and drafting somebody else? And then look at the talent pool that we have. This is and I like Mitt Romney, and I think that he is a stellar individual. But I don't think that it makes much sense to draft Mitt Romney to come in this arena. I don't know why that's happening. It just doesn't make sense to me.
With this endorsement, yes? Do you think some of the niceties between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump will end, and are you prepared to deal with attacks if he starts to hit the league?
Could you start that again, please? I missed the first part.
Donald Trump and Ted Cruz have been very friendly to each other. With your endorsement, do you think Donald Trump might turn some of those now against Cruz if he starts to lead in the polls, and are you prepared to deal with that?
Well, you know, my endorsement of Ted Cruz isn't Ted's fault, so maybe he'll turn it to me. I don't know. I hope not. And if Donald Trump is the nominee, I can be an enthusiastic supporter for Donald Trump. He's opened up a lot of the dialogue that makes some of the things I've been working for a political lifetime far more likely. So I congratulate him for that.
Congressman,
yes, sir.
What you said in regards to Ben Carson about not having that Washington experience, is that maybe one of the reasons why you didn't endorse Donald Trump? And although you're saying now that you would stand behind him if he did get the nomination, what about him do you think maybe he had some reservations?
Well, let's see. I think it is important to understand the Washington organism. And to come in there with the leverage that's in that town, and I've been there 13 years, I don't think you see me as an insider yet, but I do understand how the machinery works in that town. And so with Ben Carson, let's see. Now you asked me about Donald Trump, so I should give you an answer to that. They each have... it's going to be harder for either one of them to see what's going on in Washington, D.C., in the K Street, in the network, what's going on in the House and Senate, and how does that get leveraged from the executive branch. I actually don't hear either one of them talking about the balance of powers between the executive, the legislative, and the judicial branch of government. And I don't hear them talking very much about Supreme Court appointments and how that has been leveraging our country, and they're legislating from the bench in an outrageous way. I mean, this is a rogue Supreme Court that we have.
Amen.
And so I want a president whom I know understands that and makes those appointments with people that he probably knows now that he's watched come up through the ranks. That's really important to me. And then there's another piece, and I don't want to put this at anybody's particular feet, but the president has divided us. President Obama has divided us over and over again into categories I didn't know existed. And there's an America that's like this constantly. I mean, Ferguson, Missouri, Mizzou, Baltimore, on and on and on. Now, clear down to when the SB 1070 was the immigration bill in Arizona, and the president said you could be presumably an Hispanic taking your daughter out for ice cream and be pulled over to have your ID checked. I mean, that's just driving a wedge between people. In fact, the law says you can't do that. He did that with Professor Gates and Officer Crowley early on. Wedge, division. So I look at this country, and I don't want to be a bickering classes of people. I don't want to be 320 million people at each other's throats. I want everybody assimilated into a broad American society, a broad American dream, and I don't want to either be developing a culture that thinks it's okay just to take free shots at people because they might be your competitor. So that's one of the reasons that I think Ted Cruz can help that a lot. Yes, sir.
Donald Trump is the quintessential outsider in this campaign right now. And Ben Carson, as we said before, is leading on the evangelical Christian vote heavily. So are those two in the way of Cruz winning the Iowa caucuses? Would they need to drop out for him to be viable here?
Well, I wouldn't suggest they should drop out. They've got, you know, they're 1 and 2 in the polling. But you know, we've seen this shift, and we've seen this shift in previous caucus races. If you look back 4 years ago, we had 6 leaders during that cycle of time. And we've watched people peak and then drift down, and not very often do they come back. Donald Trump has defied political gravity several times along in his run. And he's writing history in doing so, and I salute him for it. And Ben Carson has gathered a core of support here that's broader than most thought that he would be able to gather. That's a respect for his character and especially to his faith. In the end, though, Iowans are going to come together, and we're going to be looking at our nation, the destiny of our nation. It's one thing to like and respect somebody and wish that you had somebody in the White House that carried those values of either Donald Trump or Ben Carson in, but our conscience starts to get to us the closer we get to caucus. And then we start making those harder decisions of, well, I like this person and that person, but in the end, it isn't about who you like. It's about who will do the best job as president. And I've had to make those decisions in past caucus seasons, most of you know, and it's hard. And the hardest thing for me today is that implication that I'm saying no to 14 other candidates whom I like and respect.
You mentioned, sir, that you hope the timing of this would clarify Senator Cruz's position on immigration at the time when some of his competitors are blurring those positions while you were in Europe, Eastern Europe. There was quite a conflict or controversy between Senator Cruz and Marco Rubio over the immigration positions, and he supported him back in the 2013. Did you have conversations with Senator Cruz's campaign about the timing of your announcement today regarding that?
No. After the decision of the timing was made, some of those things did get discussed. But I set the timing and picked the day. That was all me. And then that's because that seemed to be what worked out. And I told people, as soon as I come to a conviction, I'm going to tell you. So that was it. I want to do one more. Dave Price, he's at his Anna.
Congressman, when did you call Senator Cruz to let him know? And did you call any of the runner-ups or not? Or did they find out like this?
I told them all that, you know, my wife is going to learn about this decision when she reads your press. And that's true, Dave. I didn't even tell my wife. And so even though I'll say Senator Cruz knew this was coming, I have not had a direct conversation with him in the last few days that would nail this moment down. And I recall that 8 years ago, it was a surprise to the candidate I endorsed. But in this case, it wasn't a surprise, but it wasn't a phone call in the last few days. In that way, it came back through staff discussions. I'll do one more quick one and violate Sarah's rule.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Is there a sense of urgency, as Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz are both now vying for, I guess, 2.5 months before the caucus, are kind of vying for what they hope to be Donald there a sense of urgency that you understood in endorsing at this time that Ted Cruz should be the one to be getting these supporters over Marco Rubio specifically?
Well, I looked at the timing. I remember this, that last 4 years ago in November, sitting in out of my yard at 1:30 in the morning and coming to a conclusion that I thought that Rick Santorum could win the Iowa caucus. And I was not positioned where I could endorse him, but he won the Iowa caucus. And I'm in this place now where I look at this and I think these kind of boosts, these kind of endorsements now can grant the kind of momentum that can carry on out till the end of the caucus. So I think the timing is right. If I were going to look at it on the calendar, the timing is right. I think the conviction came at the right time. Got to go. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for covering this.